All right, welcome everybody. It's so nice to have you. So this is our third Opyrus writer conversation. My name is Sarah Crisp. I am the creative content director of Opyrus. I just gave myself a new title actually as I said that. I realized I'm the chief content creator of Opyrus, but we'll throw in creative and director at the same time. And this is a fairly new series that we've begun. We are doing these now monthly, which is really exciting. And we've got a lot of great authors coming up as well. And the goal of these is really to bring in a new author each month. All of our authors are fascinating people who write in a wide variety of genres, have expertise in different areas, and to give them an opportunity to share with all of you their insight, their guidance, how writing has been transformative in their lives, to answer your questions, to encourage you to connect with them, to learn from them, and really just to provide ongoing inspiration for everyone who is already writing to continue and bring your writing to the next level. For those of you who are hesitant to writing, to recognize and hear how other people got started with it and how they've used writing to enhance their lives. And for those of you who are not yet familiar with Opyrus, so Opyrus is growing and expanding and developing in a lot of new areas with an emphasis right now being on writing and well-being. And our message is really to teach everyone that everybody has a unique voice, their own story, something that only you can share, to tap into that power to write, and how writing can transform your life. And that writing also is essential to your well-being and all aspects of well-being, physical and emotional, social, financial. And we're really creating and developing new ways for you to access writing in a very user-friendly way, because we know some people are still very scared of writing, and to have it enrich your life. So I want to just quickly introduce to you the CEO of Opyrus. I did not give him a new title now. Art Gutch, who will welcome you and say a few words.
Thanks, Sarah. Yes, welcome to everyone to the third in the series, and welcome to Kimmer Lamote, who is here with us tonight, who I think is going to give us some great insight into what she is doing, which is really innovative and interesting, and I'll let her talk about that. But I wanted to just give a quick update to where we were with Opyrus and do a quick ask, if you will. Opyrus is doing some really interesting things in the area of writing and well-being. So our history is in that of working with thousands of authors to help them write their work, primarily in the form of books, both fiction and nonfiction. And about a year and a half ago, we pivoted to, as Sarah just mentioned, being a company that has a mission to help people tap their power to write to transform their lives, whether it be mentally, physically, or financially. And the amazing thing is that, and I won't be too long-winded on this, Sarah, I promise, but writing, I mean, it gives me goosebumps because we all write. Some of us write more than others, but writing I look at as this kind of like secret power, this almost like a seventh sense that a lot of us haven't been using, because the power of writing is substantial. And many of us just haven't really tapped it yet. So we're gonna be creating a new application that was actually inspired by, believe it or not, Leonardo da Vinci. And it's currently being called Write by Numbers. And Write by Numbers is an application that's gonna help people basically allow them to write more easily and to finish more easily, and also to help them tap that power so they can enhance and transform their lives. As opposed to helping people to publish books and sell books and make money, we're now more focused, because I basically had an epiphany about a year and a half ago, and I realized that it was much more exciting and interesting to work with people to write their book on that journey than it was to help them market their book. And I think anyone that started a book and finished a book has actually had a huge impact on their life. So I'll leave it at that and say, we're currently doing a WeFunder crowdfund. We've raised millions of dollars for the company in the past, but now we're raising a small amount of money and we're almost done with the financing. We're raising our last $50,000 to basically create what is called a minimum viable product for our next application. And if you go to wefunder.com/Opiris, you can see that. And I'm going to leave it at that, Sarah and Kimmerer. I'm going to sit here on the side and listen to what I know is going to be a great interview. And if anyone has any questions, please contact me. Sarah, take it away and have a great one.
All right. So the way this is going to work is I'm going to introduce right now our guest speaker, who I'm very honored to have on tonight, Dr. Kimmerer Lamote. And I'm going to then go into a series of questions that I have prepared for her. And then we're going to open that up for your questions. So if during the process of our discussion, you have a question, feel free to send it to me in the chat. You can do that directly. You can do it to the entire group. I'm going to take the questions at the end and I'll read them to her and she'll have a chance to respond to them. And that's how this is going to work. We are recording, so this will be accessible as our first two. Well, our very first writer conversation was with author Inette Miller, and our last one with Dr. Tim Morrison. And now we have Dr. Kimmerer Lamote. So I'm going to read to you her very impressive bio. And she's really an exceptional woman. So I'm very excited for you to get to know her tonight. So Kimmerer Lamote, PhD, is an author, philosopher, playwright, scholar, dancer, and mother of five, ages 12 to 45. Isn't that good? You now, I'm just, you know, improvising as I go along. 12 to 25, formerly on the faculty of Harvard University, she and her partner followed a dream in 2005 and moved to the country to make art. Since then, Kimmerer has explored the power of writing in multiple genres, including literary nonfiction, family memoir, blog posts, as well as musical theater. Drawing on her experiences as a writer, dancer, and mother, she has created an original philosophy of movement detailed in her book, Why We Dance, Columbia University Press. That is right here, and we will be referencing that as well. Along the way, Kimmerer has received fellowships for her writing and dancing from Radcliffe Institute of Advanced Study, the Harvard Center for the Study of World Religions, both which are part of Harvard, two grants from the Lower Adirondack Regional Arts Council, and she is the author of 6 nonfiction books, 2 musicals, 9 songs, and has over 100 articles on Psychology Today, and she's currently working on a young adult novel, and also you're the mother to a brand new calf, I believe, I saw as well. And when she's not writing or dancing, Kimmerer is helping her children take care of their 2 turkeys, 4 cows, 4 cats, 13 hens, and large vegetable garden. You can learn more about her at KimmererLamote.com. We'll put that in the chat at the end, and at Nietzsche the Musical. So as you're gonna hear, she has incorporated writing into every aspect of her life, which is what's so fascinating about this, that writing has kind of gone through the journey of all of these different areas. And her writing ranges, it is esoteric, it is academic, it is poetic, it is practical, it is empathetic, it is insightful, it is inspirational. It's really incredible how many styles and areas you delve into. The first thing I read from you is a very practical parenting piece, and then reading now Why We Dance. So she definitely is well acquainted with many, many styles and genres of writing. And to begin with, you know, as someone who does so much and has so many titles, right? With you, you can kind of throw out any title and it would probably be appropriate, you know? So if we're gonna call you the dancer, the philosopher, the scholar, the mother, the farmer, the academic, the composer, they all fit. At what point in that array would you say that writer, you know, was something that you attributed to yourself or connected to?
That is such a good question. And when you sent me the questions, Sarah, which were brilliant, they made me think a lot. And I have to say, you're going to laugh at my answer to this, because I really didn't come to think of myself as a writer until about 3 years ago, 2018. I was working on my sixth book, which was a history of people who have studied religion and dance. It was a scholarly book for a research series at Brill. And I was just editing, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, I really love this. I'm a writer. And I had never had that thought before. Now, why not? Because you're right. Writing has been permeated all aspects of my life. And I think the reason is because the experience that I had first in terms of my own identity was being a dancer. So when I was a junior in college and I was studying abroad in France, I was walking down the street one day and I had this little moment that we sometimes get in our lives where it was just, I'm a dancer. It was strange for me to have this revelation because I hadn't had a lot of dance training at that time. I had done a lot of reading and writing, but I hadn't had a lot of dance training. I didn't have dance friends. I didn't have dance mentors. I didn't have a lot of technique, but it was very clear to me that I was going to need to figure out what this meant. So I started researching dance. I started trying to understand why it was hard to be a dancer in today's culture. And it has been true in my life that because I'm a dancer, I have something to write about that feels very important to me. And not only that, but I have a need to write about it. Now you could say, if you're gonna be a dancer, why not just dance about it? And I have danced about it. I've choreographed and created and performed. But the thing is, we live in a culture where writing is the medium through which knowledge and authority are articulated. If it's important, it gets written down. It gets remembered and passed on and shared through this really important medium of writing. So if I was gonna try to say something about dancing or bring it to people's attention as being valuable as I believed it was, I was gonna need to write about it. So when I set out to do a PhD, my whole reason for doing a PhD was to figure out where in the philosophy and theology of the modern period, where did dance get pushed off the map? Where did dance get marginalized as an art within modern Western culture? Because if we look at human history, we'll see that the relationship between dance and society, the place of dance in society, has been very different in different cultures. And my studies at this point really stirred in me a pretty conflicted relationship with writing. Because the more I researched, the more I realized that there are cultures that exist today where dance is absolutely central. Dance is the medium of knowledge. Dance is the way in which people learn about their cultures. It's the way in which people connect with one another. It's the way in which the knowledge is transmitted. And those cultures don't have books. But all of a sudden, when you have cultures that have books, dancing has less value. So why is it that in cultures where the book becomes central, where the word becomes holy, where the medium of connecting with the sources of spirituality and value, which are the most important in our lives, comes through words, why is it so necessary? Why does dance become marginalized? We can see this happening, you know, in a large scale in terms of just the mechanisms of colonialism. So I did a lot of research on how when the colonial powers went into indigenous cultures, whether we're talking Native American cultures or African cultures or South Asian cultures, one of the things the missionaries and politicians wanted to do was to stop the dancing. Because if the indigenous people were dancing, they weren't reading and writing. And if they weren't reading and writing, then they weren't getting those Western values. They weren't getting that, in a large part, that Christianity that the missionaries and that the colonists wanted to impose. So don't worry, I'm getting to a better better account of writing. But my point is that it was very important for me from the beginning to think about this relationship between dancing and writing, and how in our history they have been antagonistic. Not always, but sometimes. So in my work, what I wanted to do was to bring forward a different relationship between dancing and writing. How can we understand these practices as being related to one another? And how can we even think about writing itself as a form of dance? And as I began to explore this path, lots of things opened up. Because writing, like any technology, is powerful. And in order to understand how and why it's powerful, we need to know what its limits are. We need to know what it's good at. We need to know how it educates our senses. We need to know what it opens us up to perceive. And we need to know if there are places where the very acts of reading and writing are causing us not to notice things. So this is where some of my work came down. What are the practices of reading and writing? How do they educate our senses? And how can we make sure that we are educating our senses, that we balance? Okay, so just to step back 1 minute, if we think about the practice of learning to read and write, what does it require? You know, if you look at a five-year-old who's trying to learn to read and write, it is not easy. It does not come naturally to us. Before the age of one, we're already moving to music, we're already dancing. But we don't really have the facility, the small motor skills, the neurological connections to pick up a pen or pencil or crayon to type on a keyboard until we're 5, 6, 7. And in that process, we need to learn to sit still. We need to learn to focus our energy into our frontal lobes and our frontal limbs. And the thing is, when we learn to read and write, we can learn to imagine that our body is not important. We can learn to believe that the ideas we have in our minds are just born in our minds. We can learn to believe, as Rene Descartes famously said, that I think, therefore I am. And this is a very powerful way of being, and it's a very powerful skill that humans have. But if we forget that we are bodies, if we forget that every idea we have comes from our interaction with the natural world, then the ideas we start to think will start to not be responsive to the world, not be accountable to the world. So what I have worked on in my writing is to try to think about what kind of practices do we need to draw our attention into our bodies, to connect with the earth, so that when we go into that moment of writing where we're focusing our energy and intention and letting it flow through words, that those words are going to be suffused with the reality of our sensory engagement with the natural world.
So it's so interesting, the angle you took that too, because when I was reading the book, first of all, it reads like a dance. It moves, it's poetic, like it feels like a dance with words. But what struck me as very interesting and connective and analogous to writing is that you begin with this question even, you know, am I a dancer and does that matter? And very often I was replacing, as a writer, you know, that word, dancer, with writer. And what you had mentioned, which I thought was a really overwhelming thing to a lot of people who want to write, is that, you know, are you a dancer if you're not performing, if you're not making money doing it, if there's not a professional aspect? And I think as writers, very often that comes up. Is there a point in writing if you're not publishing, if you don't have a book out, if people aren't reading it, if it doesn't go anywhere? And as you were discussing that process with dancing, which, mind you, I was actually like laughing to myself that this is all in a book published by Columbia University Press, right? So like, you've done this huge thing of getting this book out as you're debating if you're a dancer. Meanwhile, it's like, you're a writer. You're definitely a writer. You've been approved in the writing world by this. But that real question. And I think that's such a huge thing. And so it's something we're really trying to stress now with Opyrus, that the process not only counts, but is absolutely essential in and of itself. It's not just the end result. It's not just if the book gets out. It's not just if other people read it, but that all of these therapeutic benefits to writing, which was also the argument you were making with dance, impact and affect our life in that way. You know, so I found that like really, really fascinating with that. And you actually have, you know, this quote I want to read from your book. It says, in every moment, the movements we make in relationship to what is bring it to life as what it is for us. We humans, based on how we move, participate in the creation, not only of poems or plows, nor even of our own bodily selves. As we move, we participate in the co-creation of the reality in which we live. And that was also something that to me, you know, I actually wrote it out when I was like, how every step we take and every move we make, I'm like, oh, yeah, there's a whole song about that. But that, you know, it changes reality, that and that the idea of even dancing with words, that we start with words, they develop into sentences and they develop into paragraphs, that becomes the stance and this movement and the direction we take it is going to, you know, kind of like reveal a new reality. With the writing, did you, you know, in addition to obviously it being a means in which to share the theories of dance, did the writing process itself and the shift from movement and physical movement to having to sit still and almost like emotionally, mentally move with your words, did that feel like a dance and a co-creation in its own right?
Yes, definitely. Oh, you said so many good things there. Let me pick up on a few of them. One of them is that I do believe that writing is an incredible practice for self-knowledge. And I feel that sometimes when people sort of want to write, they get stuck about whether or not they have something to express. Like, I have to have an idea, I have to have a story, there has to be something, and then they feel like, oh no, I don't have anything to write about. But the point is, with writing is that it's a way, and dancing helps me realize this, it's a way of engaging the material world. So when you write, the action of writing, whether it's with your hands or with, you know, with a keyboard or with, is an action which itself draws out your thoughts. So it does two things. It creates spaces inside of yourself for thinking. It creates the space and the time that it takes for you to do that writing. Even just, it takes the space and the time that it takes you to get the words out. It spaces and times your thoughts. It stretches them. It pulls them. And what ends up happening then is that that new thoughts appear. They pop up. Things that you didn't know that you were even thinking or even feeling. And this is how I find as writing is a practice in my own life. I feel like if I go without writing for a couple of days, I start to feel ungrounded. I feel like I need to actually pick up that pen. And for me, it's a pen and a journal, longhand, lined paper. And I need to just allow myself to connect with that place inside of myself where words begin to bubble up. So those words bubble up and they come out, and that is just a joyful process. However, there will get to a point in my writing, when I'm working on writing, when all of a sudden the words dry up, and this will happen on a daily basis. And what do you do then? Well, at that point, I feel like my sensation is all telescoped to one tiny little point. And now I need to engage in another activity that will draw me back out again. And so I find that for me, dancing and writing is a rhythm. It is a dance between those two. It's a rhythm. It's a rhythm in which I'm constantly opening up to the world to have experiences and to engage in the kinds of sensory realities that are around me. And then I'm allowing that energy to focus. But if I start to get too tired, if my body starts to get too tired, if I'm too hungry, if I'm too cold or too hot, then all of a sudden, I'm not able to write in the same kind of way. So I cultivate this awareness so that I try to keep my writing grounded in the reality of my body. So And then what I end up writing in my journals ends up becoming material that I then use in my books. Now, I didn't intend to have it work this way, but it has again and again and again, where if I take, you know, I take a certain problem to my journal, I take an issue I'm having to my journal, I take a thought that's bothering me to my journal, I take a problem with one of my children to my journal, and I just write about it. I write everything I can. There's no judgment, there's no bars. Let the words flow, let the words flow, let the ideas come, new ideas come, insights come. And then all of a sudden, I have something to share. And now that happens with dance too. So what happens is I'll take the experience in dance that I've had and I'll take it to my journal and I'll write in the journal and I'll write about that experience in dance. And what it will do was it'll make me even more aware of what happened in that experience of dancing. And so I'll take what I find in my writing and then take it back with me into my dance practice. And so my dance practice becomes richer because of the writing. And then the dance practice generates ideas, which I explore in the writing. So it becomes this back and forth. Now, it's not always easy to shift from one to the other. In fact, it's kind of challenging. And that in itself takes practice. It takes discipline. It takes discipline to stop writing when you're not really thinking good thoughts. It takes discipline to allow yourself to sort of open and feel some more things. And then it takes, you know, discipline also to allow yourself to sit down and trust that when you start holding that writing implement, when you start engaging that page, then things are going to flow.
So you also tapped into a bunch of different things that I'm curious about, some of the questions that were going to come up later, but just so it flows right now with what you were saying, I think that writer's block, you know, or getting stuck with that and really this like kind of like run and return between needing to move, needing to process and write and express, which forms new ideas and mood movements and how it all, you know, really intersects, which is very much the process that I think until somebody's done it, it's hard to even understand that. And it's one of there are now all of these different, you know, studies that show that even writing 10 minutes a day does so much for one's, you know, mental well-being in terms of that processing and sometimes stopping yourself before you've hit the block, you know, only writing 10 minutes a day. So I'm curious, you know, you spoke about when the writing's almost bubbling forth, when you have a need to write. But for someone, let's say, who never has a need to write, you know, and we're trying to do the opposite and encourage them to do this, do you have like, let's say a writing, I don't know if ritual is the right word, but that you keep yourself every day you're going to write for X amount of time, or do you wait until you're inspired to write? And then if you do wait, what happens when the inspiration just isn't coming, especially when you have that deadline or you need to get something out, you know? And then where I want to go, and I want to speak about this next, is because you do so many different genres, they all almost require a different part of you that's going to tap into, but how do you keep yourself to a writing schedule?
You know, it varies. Well, the first thing I want to say is that I don't believe in writer's block. Mm. I don't believe in it. And I don't believe in it for this reason. It's because I don't believe that writing is simply an individual sitting down. I believe that when we write, we're opening to receive whatever's present in the universe in that moment for us. That there is, for lack of a better word, a spiritual aspect. And that things want to come through us. I mean, things, that's very vague. But words and shapes of experience want to come through us. Why? Because I believe human beings are inherently creative. We're inherently creative because we're bodies that move. So this is another way it connects with dance for me. Movement is the medium through which we live our lives. It's the movement through which we learn everything. It's the way we learn to play an instrument. It's the way we learn to get around in our lives. It's the way we learn to do a sport. It's the way we learn to do math problems. It's the way we learn to even read, is through learning certain patterns of movements. If your eyes can't make the movements of tracking words, you can't read. So if there's all kinds of patterns of movements that are involved that are basic to fundamental to our existence, and in every movement, in every moment, we're moving, and that movement is generating insights, information about our worlds. So this process of creativity through our just sheer fact of sensory perception is happening in every moment. And who we are is drawing on that and bringing it forth in the shape of ourselves. So that when we're writing, we can allow what's happening in the moment to come through us. Now, this is why I don't believe in writer's block per se, because things that come through us have their own rhythm and their own time and their own logic and their own life. And you have to honor that life. So there are things that you can do to invite ideas to come. There are things that you can do to coax it, to make it more likely that things are going to happen. But at some moment, if you've reached a point where there aren't any ideas coming, well, that's a sign that maybe you need to do something else. Now, sometimes this happens to me if I arrive at an end and like, I really don't know what's next. I don't know what to do. What's next. I do what Twyla Tharp calls scratching. Twyla Tharp has this wonderful book called The Creative Habit. And she talks about this process about scratching, where you're just kind of like reaching around, like looking at everything, like chickens scratch in the ground, right? To try to find, or birds scratch to try to find worms. And you just wait, you look for something that's just going to sort of catalyze your imagination. And so, you know, you might just read something or see something or engage with somebody in a certain way that sparks your imagination. So I feel like if you get to a point where things feel like they're drying up, that's just a sign that there's actually more waiting for you. Like there's more waiting for you as opposed to less. Like your pleasure is there and it's waiting and there's more of it than you can imagine. You just need to open yourself up and receive it. So do I have a particular practice? You know, I don't think there is any practice that works for anybody or for everybody all the time. You know, you can read stories about famous authors, and some of them like to work in the evening after everything's quiet, and some of them like to work in the morning before everything gets going. Some of them like to work in the middle of the day after they've kind of had their exercise and settled themselves and found a quiet space. You know, there was this very famous scholar at Harvard whose favorite time for writing was from 12 midnight to 4 a.m. in the morning, and then she'd go to sleep and sleep till noon and then wake up again, and she's brilliant. And so I don't think, you know, there's no formula. Like the key is to find whatever it is that's going to help you be in that place where you can be most receptive. For some people, that means taking care of little business. For some people, that means just making a list and saying, I'm going to take care of that business later. You know, for me, it has become like the habit has become a need. I mean, one of the things that humans are, because we're dancers, is that we're really good at creating habits. We learn patterns of movement, and those patterns of movement then guide us. They compel us. They feel like something we need to do. And so the sensation for me, you know, of being in a place where I'm writing is desirable enough that I want it. And I mean, I'm not sure I know what to say to somebody who says they don't want to write. I feel like our minds are not really good at motivating us. You know, when it comes right down to it, the motivation for doing anything has got to come from our heart. Our mind can help guide us. Our mind can help scratch. Our minds can help protect us, protect our hearts. Our minds can clear space for our hearts. But when it comes to actually being the engine, there's got to be heart there. There's got to be that love. And it seems like part of what Opiris is able to do, which is such a cool thing, is to help people understand why they should love it or why they can love it.
But you just said something really fascinating that I think can kind of shift this. And for those who do feel that stuckness, that writer's block, which I really find so interesting, generally writers, you know, we think of them as givers, right? They're writing, they're creating, they're giving something over. You spoke about writing as a process of being a receiver, and that there is something coming to you that you receive. And then through the writing it, you're both giving and receiving, which is already so obviously interconnected. But I think there's that idea, if you know, somebody has nothing to say, I have nothing to write about, I have nothing to say, it's because there's that pressure of I need to give, I need to provide. When it's let me just receive what is going on around me and then try to process that through words and through writing, you know, it creates something completely new. And we have on the site my favorite quote, I use it every opportunity I can get, but I feel like it, you know, really represents how I connect to writing is, it's been attributed to different people, but I don't know what I think until I see what I write. And that there are times that just writing without having that whole end goal in mind and not even knowing what you're saying, but letting the feelings kind of dance and pour through you and then putting them into words, we are receiving, we are giving, we are processing, and it's creating something that couldn't have been that intention. And being, and I want to jump into the different genres you do, because being that you do write, you know, now you're working on this adult novel and you've done nonfiction and you've done fiction and you've done the songwriting and all these different types of writing, which all are creatively, you know, kind of come from different places, you know. First of all, what genre would you say is easiest for you or most challenging? And do you, you know, do you find sometimes that you're starting in one genre and then it takes you into another?
That's a super good question. I think, you know, again, in some ways, it might look like a real diverse range of products. And in some sense, that's true. At the same time, they kind of all come from the same place inside of myself, which is my sense of myself as a dancer. I am a dancer. I mean, that is my truth. And so when I'm writing nonfiction and making scholarly arguments, most of the time, not always, but most of the time, they have some aspect to do, have to do with some aspect of our bodily immersion in this world. And it might not be related specifically to dance, but I feel like my perspective of dance has given me a different perspective on what it means to be human. And so that means I can say something about everything that has to do with humanity from the perspective that dance has opened up. And so in some ways, that's my most comfortable mode of being, is the sort of more scholarly kind of argument and way of presenting material. When I moved here to the farm and I wanted to write, I decided, you know, I've got these ideas and I feel like if I really want to address this issue about our relationship to movement and its value in our life, I don't want to just be writing scholarly books. I want to be writing books that people who don't have years of education in philosophy and theology can also read. I feel like these ideas are relevant for everybody. And so I had to train myself to write in a kind of more narrative, colloquial storytelling kind of way. And like I rewrote that book 4 times, getting to that, you know, goes from 400 pages down, kept winnowing it, kept simplifying. And from that book, then I was able to get the blog. Psychology Today, you know, contacted me and asked me if I wanted to do a blog for them. And that was a huge, you know, learning curve in trying to tell stories. And you know, they always like the 10 reasons why, which is so, you know, it's kind of an anathema to my scholarly argument self. But it really, it very much sharpened and made me really have to digest what I was doing. And at the same time, there's always been this, you know, impulse in myself to have the writing connected in a certain kind of way with movement, either by, you know, and have that enacted in my book. Like sometimes I think about the fact that I want my books to enact the process of writing them. Like when I read my books, I want you to know where those ideas came from. I want you to know how they percolated up through my body, how they came through my interactions with people and through my movements in the natural world. So, and in some ways, from that point of view, it wasn't that far a shift to try to tell a larger story in the form of a musical. And it's a longer story of why I've written a musical, but I know our time is short, so I can go into that if you want. But for me, in some ways, just to summarize, the differences come out of a creative play with movement, with the movement of words and what the combination of words, putting them together, can create.
Beautiful. So what I want to do is open it up now if people have questions. I definitely have plenty of other questions I could ask, and we will if other people don't want, but I do want to be respectful of those of you who are here. If you have any questions you'd like to ask, so please, again, you can send it to me in the chat directly or post it for everyone. Okay, we have one right now. What is the biggest impact that writing has had on your life?
Ah, so the process of my own writing. I mean, there have been many books that I've read that have absolutely, you know, slayed me. And one of my most favorite things to do as a scholar is to find a book that just shifts my horizons. And as a writer, that's what I most aspire to do, is to be able to write books that shift people's horizons, that open them up to seeing things in new ways. And so there are a number of different experiences I've had, and I can think about them like in terms of different books, where there's just been a moment where I allowed myself to write about something, and that process of allowing myself to write about it, it just enabled me to understand it so much better. I mean, one of the best examples of this probably is my memoir, Family Planting. And it's a really good example because it was the second book I wrote after we moved here to the farm. And it basically is a document or a sort of a loose narrative of our first 3 years here on the farm. And it was a time that was actually really challenging. So we moved here and my partner and I had this dream and we were very much in love and our love generated this dream and we got here to the farm and all of a sudden the love that had been big enough to dream the dream wasn't really big enough to live it. And so he and I went through this period of, you know, really intense growth as a couple. And during this time, I was journaling, because I was desperately trying to help us work through this process. So that process of writing, which I would go and I would write, and then I would bring everything back to him, and it was this process of going back and then talking and going back and talking, moving and doing the work we were doing. And I got to the point where I was sort of trying to write a book about family relationships. And I realized I have all the material right here in my journals and it's very personal. And so I talked about it with my partner, Jeffrey, and he's like, you have to write this book. He's like, you have to write this book. You have to share our story. You have to tell people how we got through this moment to the place that we are now. So I did. And in some ways, in terms of my personal life and the writing, the book that has shifted me personally the most, that is probably the most.
Wow. And you tapped into something that for myself as a writer, I've definitely struggled with. And, you know, the first thing I read from you was a parenting piece. And I used to write, I mean, it just flowed for me. I processed, I shared my life with the world. It was all great and good until my kids could read. And suddenly, or they could read when I was doing this, but when they really didn't want the whole world knowing about what was going on in their lives and my life. And I feel like I've pushed pause, you know, for this large period of not knowing how to write, because if I can't be vulnerable, if I can't be honest, if I can't share my life, I'm not so inspired to want to get it out. And yet I can't, because now it's, you know, like that really cute temper tantrum is very different when you're not talking about your 2-year-old and you're talking about your 20-year-old, you know, like suddenly they're not so thrilled to have that out there. How, I mean, it's amazing that Jeffrey was so open to, yes, share our, you know, what we've struggled through, because it can help people and it absolutely can. But do you ever find that you're either changing your truth for the audience or for the potential audience, or stuck in how to write about something when it just feels like too raw to be out there, you know, in terms of your personal narrative writing?
Definitely. And, you know, when I go back and read that book now, I'm like, wow, I really like put it out there. And I'm not sure I would do that now, you know, but I also had the same experience with my children, that once they got to a certain age, you know, 10, 12, that it just didn't feel right to write about them anymore. And I always did it with respect and in a way that I would hope that they would go back there and appreciate basically how hard I was trying to meet them wherever they were. But it started to feel different for me. And so I did shift. I mean, I talk Why We Dance, that's kind of the last, there are frames for each chapter. So that even though Why We Dance does have sort of a scholarly argument, for each chapter, I have a narrative frame that's kind of like an experience that, again, kind of enacts the process of the ideas being born. And I talk in that about giving birth as one of those frames and my experience with my my fifth child who was born. And that was really kind of the last time that I've sort of dipped into that sort of a deeply personal kind of vein. So that was right to 2009. Well, I probably finished writing that about 2013. And since then, I have moved kind of into different currents. And both in my scholarly work, going sort of farther into the study of colonialism and capitalism and indigenous cultures. And then in my creative work, moving into musical theater, and into this, you know, fiction novel that I want to write, which does give you permission to draw on things that are near and dear, but in a way that's not so autobiographical.
Yes, I want to ask you about that, actually, because that really is a whole nother thing. And one of the questions actually brought that up as well. So I saw in your bio that Earth Keepers is the young adult novel that you are currently working on. Can you tell us about that project and if you have any other future writing projects in the works?
Yes, so Earth Keepers, so I got into young adult fiction in part because my children were reading it and I wanted to know what they were reading, so I started reading their books. And the hallmark of young adult fiction, you know, every genre has its sort of hallmark, is that you have some young person who's usually, you know, in teens, late teens, who discovers a kind of superpower and then is able to right the wrongs of the world. So here it is again, you know, I'm a dancer and boy, wouldn't I like to read a young adult book like this, in which dance is a superpower. Like dance actually is that medium which allows us to access the wisdom, the guidance, the understanding, the compassion, the empathy, the connection to the environment, which is going to move us forward as a species and help us create a sustainable way of being. So I feel that Earth Keepers is another way of expressing and writing my dance philosophy that's in Why We Dance. At the same time, as I have been working to try to put it into this sort of narrative form, or I've learned something about my own dance philosophy that I hadn't expected before. Like I've come up with insights that I'm now thinking, oh, I need to take those insights and I need to write another nonfiction book about dance that sort of draws on this insights that I've gotten from writing in this kind of more creative way. So it's this back and forth. So I did write the first draft of Earth Keepers and I've sent it around to some people and gotten some feedback. And I'm excited about it in some ways, but I'm also sort of dissatisfied because I feel like I didn't do exactly what I wanted to do. Dance isn't the superpower that I wanted it to be. It ends up being kind of like a trick. And so I'm now going back and rewriting it again after I find, and I had to wait for several months before I could figure out what's the solution. And then one day it just appeared to me, you know, after writing in my journal, you know, 5 million times, I don't know what the solution is. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know. Oh, there it is. Okay. So, and now I'm sort of working on that. But the major project sort of at the forefront of what I'm doing right now is my musical about the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. Now, this is a musical that comes right out of my dance scholarship. My second book is on the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. It's on the dance imagery in his work and how that dance imagery is a symbol for the practice and the fruit of loving life. Dance is about cultivating joy. It's about being able to open yourself to love life so that you free yourself from anger and bitterness and the need for revenge, and you embrace life and your own creativity in what that life is going to become, which is all themes that we've been talking about tonight. So it all of a sudden, it suddenly made sense to me as I started you know, thinking about Nietzsche's work, that he actually needs a musical written about him in order to communicate this idea, which goes throughout his work, which not everybody sees, that the dance is actually important.
Wow. Yeah, I love that line, that Nietzsche needs a musical written about him. It's amazing. And you have actually, I want to kind of wrap up with another line from your book, which just really struck me. As I read it, I was like running out of the little stickies because I want to keep like remembering different lines. And it got to the point where I'm like, if I just like highlight every beautiful, powerful statement, like forget it, I'm highlighting this whole book. But one that I did write down, and it's right in your introduction. And it's another time that I feel that dancer and writer completely interplay. And by the way, I think, you know, that's so powerful when a writer does something, and for every reader, it can be read in a way that completely speaks to them in whatever that synonym becomes, you know, or that interchangeable concept, because the truth is so permeating. So you write, there is a dancer in each of us and a dance in everything we do. Our task at this moment in time is to find it, nurture it, and so let the dance continue. And again, like to me, as I read that, I'm like, there's a writer, you know, in each of us and a story in everything we do. And like, that's how it read to me, and this need to tap into that. And I just find it, so inspiring. You know, I have not played around with so many different types of genres, and what you just said now, you know, maybe that's my calling, that there's this fiction book where only I know that I'm talking about all of my personal issues, and to everybody else, they can think it's fiction. And maybe that's where it will, you know, come out, but that how your fiction is helping your philosophy and your academic writing, and that's inspiring the fiction. I think that's such a powerful message, to just let yourself explore and be creative and tap into these different ways of expressing ourselves and moving. And as somebody who's somewhat been scared of dance, you've also inspired me to do that. Because I was thinking, you're right, all children dance, you know, they all move to music. That's something babies do. And they also all tell stories. They might not be able to write them till they're five, but they're definitely storytellers. And at some point we get that kind of like beat out of us a little bit, like unless you're going to become a professional writer or a professional dancer, don't bother. And it's remembering like these are the ways we express ourselves and use our words and our bodies and our movements. So I just want to thank you so much for sharing your brilliance and your insight, and just there's still so much more that I could easily delve into with you, but I just find it absolutely fascinating. For everybody who wants to, I'm actually gonna put right now in the chat her website, so that you can definitely check that out. And it's got all your books are on in the website as well, right? Kimmer Lamote.
Oh, yes.
Spell that correctly. Kimmer, oh gosh, I really not multitask way too much for me at once. Okay, did that send? Oh no, I just sent it, I think, to one person. That's right. Everyone in the meeting, there you go. That's the website. Again, this is the book, Why We Dance, right. One of six. And by the way, I mean, in our last like few minutes here, you have another musical that you didn't even get into, which when you were saying musical is the one I thought you were speaking about, that you did with your entire family. What's, you want to just quickly tell everybody about that?
Yes. Yes. So the first musical that I wrote was called Happy If, Happy When. And that musical, again, tells the story of our moving to the farm. Now, I have to say that, you know, Jeffrey's a musician and I'm a dancer. And so before we had children, we did several different solo dance music concerts that we created, where I choreographed and danced and he made music and we did it. And as our children started appearing and... Well, we welcomed them. We invited them to be a part of our process. So we would perform together as a family, and we started performing together, just singing our favorite songs, you know, at the local church or the local theater. And we got to a point where we were getting better, and the children were actually really interested in it, and they were really becoming very talented musicians. And Hamilton came along and we were suddenly totally inspired by what musical theater can do. And they're like, Mom, why don't you write us a musical? So I said, oh, well, okay, maybe I'll think about that. Well, what can I tell a story about? Well, I could tell a story about our move to the farm. And so I made all five children versions of themselves. I collapsed their ages so that they were all closer together. And I have us all in the city for the first half and then all in the country for the second half. And the themes that weave through are the themes that I have in my books, What a Body Knows and Family Planting, all about, you know, what it takes to become a family and how, you know, the sort of philosophy we have as a family that we each exist to help each other thrive. And you're there to help everybody else thrive, and each one of them are there to help everybody else thrive. So you have all these people who are helping you thrive. And it creates this synergy where it's not parents serving the children and children rebelling and running away, but it's the parents and the children all helping and enabling each other. So the musical is an opportunity to actually live that together. And it was a complete joy to do. And it was that experience that made me want to write another musical where I said again, well, what do I know about? Well, I know something about Nietzsche.
Mind blowing, incredible. And I happen to know her unbelievable family. So truly all exceptional, talented, incredible people each in their own right. So Kimmer, thank you so much for your time and for your insight. We will be posting this on Opyrus, where you can also find the previous two that we did. I don't know if you're seeing these, but you are getting thank yous from people. And we are also going to be sending all of you who registered the direct link for that as well. As soon as we post that, we'll be doing our next Opyrus writer conversation next month. I encourage you all to please check out also our WeFunder page so you can see all of the incredible new innovative directions and developments that we are currently working on and getting ready to launch. And, you know, thank you really all for participating. I hope you will tap your power to write and be inspired and dance your evening away. So thank you very much for joining. Kimmer, thank you for everything.
Thank you, Sarah, so much.
And looking forward to continuing the conversation. I hope to see you all next month. We'll be advertising that one in the next probably week or so. All right. Have a good night. Thank you all very much.